Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It is the Herd. Nick Wright in for Colin Cowherd. 15 minutes from now, Peter King joins us. 5-6 minutes from now, I've let it stand long enough. I didn't think he needed to be defended, but I defend Patrick Mahomes with facts, stats, and evidence, not to defame others, but if folks are going to tear down Mahomes after his first bad playoff game, he ain't the only one going down, boys and girls. We'll do that in about 5 minutes. Before I get to that, Joy Taylor, I have a question for you. It's a bit of a personal question. I probably should have asked you this off the air to make sure it's okay to ask on the air, but too far down the road. Is there anyone in particular who has ever doubted you? Oh. Like that you know thought you couldn't do it and that you think back on, like from early in your broadcasting career, that maybe Queen Petty herself occasionally checks in on, like, let me see how that person's doing because I'm Joy Bleeping Taylor. Like, is there that person for you? I'm not saying you have to name them, but you can if you want, or just like give the anecdote if you would.
Yeah, someone once told me that I wasn't good enough to do sports updates.
Really? Look at Joy Taylor. Like the 90 second, like for AM radio in Miami or wherever, like the bottom and top of the hour updates.
Yeah, it's a much more ridiculous story than that, and I'll tell you it off air. But yeah, I mean, I'm a grudge holder, and I'm like one of those people that if they tell me, if someone tells me I can't do it, I'm gonna do it. Like it's something that I wanted to do, obviously, and they're like, you can't accomplish this. I'm going to do it, and then I'm gonna make sure they know that I did it as much as humanly possible.
Yep. So I've got a similar one on sports updates. By the way, those are hard. Those are not good. I never got good at them. I never could do them. I don't know if you can tell, I'm not good at talking in only 60-second bites. Like, I need a little more room than the sports update allows for.
That is fair.
But there was one local radio host in Kansas City who, there was an article being written about me, and he was quoted, and he was the competition. And he was like, listen, over here, we're the Patriots, and he's more the Browns, so we don't really focus on him. And yeah, and that, by the way, that happened 12 years ago, and I did an interview with The Athletic last week, and they asked me about my sports radio inspirations growing up, and I name-checked that guy personally and said he was terrible. I'll never forgive him. I will never forgive the guy. Like, I actively dislike him. And I thought you might be the same way. And the reason I ask about it is not because it's apples to apples, but I think it is good to have external motivations. And I think when we see this Bruce Arians quote about Brady and Belichick, I think it is healthy, actually. Healthy is the wrong word. Useful to remind yourself, especially when you've succeeded, folks didn't think I could. So if we could show the Arians quote quickly. And he says, yeah, I think he's making a statement. It wasn't all Coach Belichick. And I don't think this is about for Tom proving, oh, I deserve more credit than I get for the 03. Do you guys not remember the 2003 Super Bowl? Jake Delhomme had the game of his life. I led us to 30 plus points. I don't think that's what it's about. I think it's about the fact that Bill Belichick doubted Tom Brady at the end. Tom Brady has had a lot of chips on his shoulder, and he's won all the battles. Oh, I'm the 199th pick. Really? Well, I'm going to play longer by a decade than every quarterback in my draft class. But the 199th pick stuff kind of goes away, whether he wants to admit it or not, after you win 1, 2, 3 Super Bowls. So then what was the motivation? Folks think Peyton Manning's better. Peyton Manning is winning all the MVPs. Peyton Manning is getting the first team all pros. Peyton Manning is the guy that people say is impossible to scheme against. And we know that motivated Tom because we found out during Deflategate in an email to his dad that he said, The final chapter is going to be when Tom, when I play, I being Tom, 7 or 8 more years, and Peyton is done in 1 or 2 years. And so once Peyton is dispatched of, and once he gets rings 4 and 5, and Joe Montana, that debate's over, then who is he racing against? Time. Father Time. Undefeated. He took on an undefeated opponent. You know how I know he did? Because he named a Facebook show after it. Tom versus Time. That's who I'm going after. Time. Let me see how I do. And then seemingly, when he at least was fighting Time to a draw by winning a MVP at age 40 and a Super Bowl at age 41, he out of nowhere had a new opponent. Belichick. Because Tom Brady has never stated any personal goal. I've never heard him talk about any personal goals. Not be the all-time passing leader, not have the most touchdowns. The only personal goal I've ever heard him state is, I want to play till I'm 45. And Bill Belichick told him no. How did he tell him no? He wouldn't give him a contract extension in the summer of 2019. It's on the record. It's not speculation. We know that happened. And that's what led to the divorce. So I, even if Tom Brady's the one who walked out the door, Belichick's the one that filed the papers. And so I do believe, and I do buy, that Tom Brady's latest chip on his shoulder is Bill Belichick. But not about who deserves credit for their run together, but about the fact that Belichick ended their run together in a way that I'm sure Brady believes was premature. So I'll talk with Peter King about that a bit in about 10 minutes. But now I want to talk about the losing quarterback of Super Bowl 55, Patrick Mahomes. Because I see the tweets from semi-reputable sources. I see the takes. I see the, you know, just the, hey, just throwing it out there. Patrick Mahomes, passer rating in the Super Bowl, lower than Rex Grossman. I see that. I see folks saying, okay, guys, if we're going to talk about him as one of the all-time greats, we have to judge him as such. And we've got to, pardon me, we've got to figure out what this does to his legacy, having this bad game in the Super Bowl. And I'm not even going to parse whether or not he actually played that badly in this Super Bowl if you watch the game. And you recognize that he was under pressure more than any player was under pressure in any playoff game all year and for the last few years. When you look at the incompletions that literally bounced off Tyreek Hill's face mask and Darrell Williams' face mask, just take the numbers for what they are. 0 touchdowns, 2 picks, only 9 points, team blown out. The reason that even if that is circumstance independent, even if we're not doing any dispensation for the offensive line, the game plan, the drops, any of it, a scourge in sports commentary that must end is penalizing guys for playing poorly, if we want to call this playing poorly, in the final game of the year, and giving guys passes for playing poorly in one of the games leading up to the final game of the year, so poorly that their team doesn't get there. Because what is the reason this is an albatross for the time being around Mahomes' neck is because he played poorly in the Super Bowl. Now, if you argue he played poorly in last year's Super Bowl, I'm not even going to talk to you. I can't even. He scored 21 straight points to lead the second biggest comeback in Super Bowl history. I dismiss that. The argument is, it's his first bad playoff game ever, and it came in the Super Bowl. Yikes. So, I just want to show you guys some playoff games from what I think are mostly considered the 3 best modern era quarterbacks ever. Montana, Manning, and Brady. Here's one from Joe Montana, if we can show the numbers. Now, this wasn't in the Super Bowl. This was a 49-3 loss in Joe Montana's first game of the 86 postseason. And now he got knocked out of this football game, but before he got knocked out of this football game, he threw 2 picks at a 34 passer rating, and his team was getting annihilated. Now, he stays undefeated in Super Bowls in part because he played so poorly in that game. Nobody cares. Nobody hangs that around Joe Montana's neck, and they shouldn't, by the way. He's one of the five greatest quarterbacks of all time. Some would argue the second greatest quarterback of all time. But that game happened. Peyton Manning. We know he had a bunch of bad ones. But this one in particular, a 41-0 loss, not to the great New England Patriots, but to the Jets in the opening round of the postseason. Zero touchdowns, two picks, a 31 passer rating, and a total and utter annihilation. Again, these are their first games of the postseason. And now, wait, Tom Brady doesn't have any of these. No, he'd never have any of these. Oh, wait, Tom Brady in the opening game of the postseason. 33-14 loss. That almost sounds like the Super Bowl score. 150 passing yards, three picks, a 49 passer rating to Baltimore in the opening round. The point that I'm making is twofold. One is, there is not a single, not one quarterback that has been to more than one postseason that doesn't have a few, at least if you just look at the box score, awful performances. And in fact, basically all of them have multiple. And Russell Wilson, look at the box score from the NFC Championship game he won when they were defending champs, the onside kick game against Green Bay. Both Rodgers and Russell Wilson had really rough nights that night. Even Russell has a pretty close to impeccable postseason resume. He's got one. Rodgers has two that stand out. Everybody's got one. But this idea that there should be extra penalty paid if your bad game comes in the Super Bowl, when if you had just been smart enough to have your bad game in the divisional round or the wild card round and your team not make it to the Super Bowl, then we don't care about it. It's insanity. And it doesn't obviously just apply to the NFL. And we don't have to get into it here. It's the exact same thing we do with LeBron and with the finals record versus guys like, oh, I don't know, say, just pick a name out of a hat, Michael Jordan, who repeatedly got knocked out in round one, but it's like, oh, nope. Well, those losses don't count. Those losses we don't care about. It's insanity. And it's triply insane with Patrick, because he actually didn't play poorly. The least of the Chiefs' problems on Sunday was the play of Patrick Mahomes. What was the biggest factor for their problems? What will the Bucs look like next year? And what continues to motivate Tom Brady? Peter King answers all those questions next. Nick writing for Colin on The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
New tracks, new teams, and a new champ. The 2021 NASCAR season starts in just 5 days with the Great American Race, the Daytona 500, Sunday, only on Fox.
The great Peter King joins us now live on The Herd. You can read his column every Monday morning during football season, and you should read his column every Monday morning during football season, Football Morning in America on NBCSports.com. Peter, it's Nick. Thank you for joining me. I'll dive right in. Let's do something I love to do. I don't know how much you love to do it. I'll make you do it anyway, ranking things. Do you think this is Brady's most impressive of his incalculable 7 Super Bowl rings?
Well, I think it was probably slightly more impressive to win the first one with the Patriots, because remember, that was against the greatest show on turf. That was when John Madden and Pat Summerall upstairs were saying, no, just sit on the ball, go play
Take
for overtime.
Yeah.
And Brady completed 4 passes on this drive to put him in field goal range. Vinatieri kicked the winning field goal. I thought that was awfully impressive. And, you know, look, this is incalculably impressive to me because Tom Brady didn't have an offseason. He went to a new team. He's 43 years old. But the only reason why I might say that first one is more impressive is because the level of talent he had around him on this team was fantastic. You know, it is the best all-around talent that he's had on any team since he's been a quarterback in the NFL. And so my feeling is I could make an argument for either one, but that first one to me was awfully impressive too.
We've talked a lot about Brady Belichick and, you know, does this make you reevaluate who gets more credit for the six Super Bowls they won? That to me is less interesting than the ending of it, because pretty clearly Bill Belichick felt that, okay, Tom Brady can be the greatest quarterback of all time, but it doesn't mean he's still a great quarterback. And Brady said, I am. You're not giving me a chance to show it. So how and why do you think Belichick miscalculated there, which now it's pretty clear he did, when he saw him every day? I got it wrong, but I don't see him every day. I just watch football. I'm like, it looks like he's going downhill. And so how do you think Belichick got it wrong?
I don't think he necessarily got it wrong. I think this is about the way that Bill Belichick wants to build his team. He, of all the great things that Bill Belichick has done in his football career, and he's done an incredible number of them, building a team with even good offensive weapons has been one of the hardest things for him. And he could not do it and did not do it with this team, this past team in New England in 2019 and 2020, because the skill position players, you could see, and I sat with Brady for 10 minutes after the Tennessee playoff game, his last game as a Patriot. And you could just tell how frustrated he was. He wasn't angry at anybody. He was just frustrated because he didn't have enough. I think he didn't have enough weapons at all. And now you saw the same thing with Cam Newton. Everybody said, man, Cam stinks. Well, you tell me a quarterback who's going to look great when your best weapon for the whole year is Jacoby Myers. I don't see it. And so to me, I look at this team at this time right now, and I think any quarterback would be hard-pressed to win.
All right, I mentioned Belichick. I would have thought 72 hours ago the two most out-of-this-world Super Bowl defensive performances, Belichick had his fingerprints all over both of them. The 1990 Bills Giants, like people forget,
yes.
That Bills offense, I mean, you know this, it was unstoppable.
They
and Belichick was
the
D coordinator for that Giants
week.
Team.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah. Now, he did have Lawrence Taylor, but still, he's the D coordinator for that Giants team. They hold him in the teens. Everyone remembers it as the Norwood game, but the reason it could come down to that is because of that performance. And then 0-1, greatest show on turf. They held him to 3 points through three quarters before the Rams kind of exploded for a couple touchdowns at the end. I don't know if this performance by Todd Bowles matches those, but it comes damn close. What do you make of what Todd Bowles and the Bucs defense was able to do to a previously pretty unstoppable offense?
You know, I'd also add the Giants in 07, shutting down one of the great offenses of all time, you know, Spagnuolo. But Nick, what is so interesting about the Todd Bowles job in this is that you need to remember that his secondary, the six guys who played the most snaps in that secondary this year, are all 24 years of age and younger, and every one of them has been drafted in the last 3 years. So this is a secondary almost of tots, you know. As Todd Bowles told me last week for my pre-Super Bowl column, he said, you know, our guys don't even know. Like when they went to Lambeau Field, they don't know what the frozen tundra is. You know, so they don't have these sort of built-in memories that make it really hard to teach them or to erase what just happened. And the first time that they played the Chiefs this year, they were awful on defense, and their secondary, especially Carlton Davis, was awful. They designed a different game plan, and what I love about Todd Bowles' game plan is very, very simple. Andy Reid had a half to recognize that Todd Bowles was disguising almost everything, and in a 30-minute halftime, Andy Reid couldn't do anything about it. And that is when you know you have a great game plan. When a fantastic offensive coach like Andy Reid has 30 minutes to say, okay, all right, let's see what we got and let's fix it, and couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, that was shocking to me as someone that's watched the Chiefs my whole life and very closely since Mahomes has been there and Reed's been there. And that they didn't, even if they still would have lost maybe, that they didn't have a counterpunch the entire game. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was coming. I thought maybe it was too late, but I thought it was coming. It never came. All right, let's leave the Super Bowl for a moment. If you're a Seahawk fan, what should your level of concern be right now about Russell Wilson's future with the team?
I just simply don't believe that they will trade Russell Wilson, nor should they trade Russell Wilson. I have no idea what the progress would be if you trade Russell Wilson. I don't see how that's a step in the right direction, even if you get a whole bunch of first round picks or whatever. I think over and over again, it's been proven that a great quarterback, his value is almost incalculable. And if you've got one, I don't understand how you get better by either like drafting one because you think he's really good or whatever. I just don't believe John Schneider's going to trade Russell Wilson. We'll see, but I can't see it.
I just want to follow up quickly because I agree with you. I think unless the player, Deshaun is so clearly wants out that maybe he's would hold out. I don't think Russell Wilson's anywhere close to that. But you, even if you're not going to trade him, you also want him to be happy. Do you think he went on Dan Patrick's show today and said, basically, I want a seat at the table. I want to be a part of the decision-making process. Do you think in your experience around the NFL that makes sense for them to grant him that and that's something the Seahawks would grant him?
It depends on how big a seat at the table that he wants. Okay. Like for instance, John Schneider, who's a great scout. He's the one who drafted Russell Wilson 75th overall in 2012, and if you ask for a seat at the table, and again, I heard what Wilson said and I do understand what he said, but let's just make one thing clear. If you ask for a seat at the table, then you have to be willing, in this particular case, are you going to watch tape on all the receivers in the draft? Are you going to watch tape on the offensive linemen in the draft? Are you going to do all those things and then say to Schneider,
right,
hey, if I were you, I would draft John Doe of Oregon Tech, those are the questions that I think need to be answered. I think more logically, I think Russell Wilson saying to John Schneider and to Pete Carroll, listen, we have got to spend some free agent capital or some very high draft capital. We need a long-term tackle in this building right now. And we haven't drafted great on the offensive line. So I think that is probably more likely what Russell Wilson meant instead of saying he wanted a part-time job in the offseason as a scout.
Peter King, Football Morning in America, NBCSports.com. Peter, extraordinary coverage all season, as it is every season. Thank you so much. Hopefully coming up you get some well-deserved time off. I appreciate you, Peter.
Okay, thank you very much, Nick.
Absolutely. There is the great Peter King. Here is the equally great Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Your most life-changing sleep is about what's underneath. Only Casper mattresses align your spine to eliminate aches and pains with 86 supportive gel pods only on a Casper mattress, only at Casper.com. There's been a lot of comparisons between the different styles of basketball in the NBA throughout the years, and Kevin Garnett thinks that players from previous eras could not play in today's NBA. He said, I don't think guys from 20 years ago could play in this game. The fact that you can't touch players gives the offensive players so much flexibility. I don't even know if the guards from 20 or 30 years ago could play in this time right here. It's creative, it's competitive, it's saucy. You'll get dropped. A bleep will cross you over and break your ACL these days. it's an interesting perspective because, to your point earlier, we don't often hear guys from that era speak very highly about today's NBA. It's usually described as more soft and finesse, and it's kind of looked at as just a weaker version of basketball. There's a romantic nature to the violence that existed in basketball in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, and it's changed a lot. I personally prefer this brand of basketball more because I like a lot of scoring, and I like the ability to shoot three-pointers. I like the fact that the game is open to a different variety of players. And while I adore Michael Jordan and I am a complete zealot and I love the early eras of basketball, as with anything in life, stuff changes. And I'm very comfortable with change because it is the only absolute in our existence. So I wish that more guys spoke highly of today's basketball the way that that Kevin Garnett is. And he's also not entirely wrong.
Well, so first of all, I love how people acknowledge every single thing gets better except for the thing they were once great at. That actually does not. It's like, hey, here's a fun thing to do. Go watch an episode of MASH. Guess what? It's not funny by today's standards. Sorry. Like, and you go even further back. Like, go, I dare you. Go turn on an episode of I Love Lucy. There are like 70 million people watching it. Comedy evolves. Technology evolves. What, Joy? I offended you?
Let's not get crazy.
The I Love Lucy is
a bridge
too far. Let's
not get crazy, all right?
Okay, but you follow me. Everything evolves.
Yes.
And we all acknowledge that everything evolves. And then people are like, except for my sport, which happened to be better, the greatest era happened to be exactly when I was playing it. Before, it wasn't so great. Since then, it wasn't so great. But when I was playing, it was great. So I applaud KG for what he's saying. I do think the nuance of the conditioning, like if you were able to retroactively go back and watch an 80s playoff game and track how far guys run on the court and compare it to now, my guess is guys run during a game three times as far, just from off-ball movement and pace of play, all of it, even though the 80s was actually a very high pace of play. But the game has changed. And change is not worse, even if guys don't want to acknowledge that, hey, maybe it's gotten better since I left. That happens. It happens in everything.
Well, I will say there are players who play today who couldn't play during that era as well. And that's also fair to say. But to say that it was better then and it's not as good now, it's just different. And that's okay. Things change. We all need to get a little more comfortable with adjusting our mindsets from time to time. It's actually very good for you. It's very healthy. So at age 43, Tom Brady won his 7th Super Bowl and isn't showing any signs of slowing down.
This doesn't change.
Despite
I thought this was
Nick Wright's many, many predictions about it.
This is the one constant.
Yeah. Before I move on, Nick, I will say, though, couldn't we just, in theory, just let Tom Brady tell us when he's done? Couldn't we just do that? Isn't that an easier way to go through life?
Well, you know, I mean, you got a time machine for me. I'll take your advice for the last 4 years. I made a bet that I thought would have paid off by now. So, yeah, maybe I should have done that. And maybe I'll just predict his demise again next year. I haven't decided yet. I have to wait and see. But go ahead. Sorry.
Well, LeBron's still playing at a high level as well. And he's not going to be planning the final stage of his career based off of what Brady's accomplished.
Just to see, you know, him go out and do the things that he's done, you know, in his career. For him to win another one yesterday in the fashion that he won, it was pretty cool. It's very inspiring for a guy like myself. But two different sports, two different positions. You know, I don't know how much more I'll be able to give to the game. But you know, the way I feel right now, we'll see what happens. But I have no timetable on it.
Now, LeBron is obviously a different type of athlete than Tom Brady. So the conversation about when Tom Brady or when LeBron James is going to retire would be mostly considered pretty silly, especially the way that he is performing these days. And he has, but similar to Tom Brady, not an extended injury list throughout his career. He's done a remarkable job taking care of his body, mixed with some luck. But the one thing that LeBron has talked about, he hasn't talked about retiring at a specific age or wanting to play to a specific age, but he has talked about wanting to play with his son, Bronny, who won't be eligible for the NBA until 2024. So I could see him waiting to do that. And the way he looks now, that's not unfathomable. It's only a few years from now.
Well, but I also think, first of all, Bronny's got to, it's one thing to be good enough to make the NBA. It's another thing to be good enough to make the NBA the first moment you're eligible to make the NBA.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, I don't, and the only reason I'm even comfortable talking about this is because LeBron has opened the door to it. But, like, I think there's a universe that exists where Bronny does actually make the NBA, but it's in 2026. Now, is LeBron going to play for another 6 years? Then he is basically the age Brady is now. He'd be 42. I mean, I think he could do it. I think LeBron's probably got joy, cautiously, 3 more years after this one as the best player in the league. And then the next 3 years is like the second or third best player in the league. And so if then he wants to stop, then that's fine. Around age.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Tom Brady and LeBron James are extreme outliers in both of their sports respectively. And we've seen guys play into their 40s in the NBA, obviously. But I just don't like to compare them to other people, which is why I stopped talking about Tom Brady possibly retiring a long time ago. And I'll never have that conversation about LeBron James. When they want to quit, they'll let us know. And it just doesn't serve me any purpose to talk about when they're going to be done. Like, I could easily see the scenario you just laid out happening. And I have no reason to doubt that based off of the way that he takes care of his body and the way he looks this year having an MVP level season.
Right.
So Russell Wilson's not been protected very well during his time in Seattle, and his team is not happy about the fact that he's taking all these hits. Russell's camp has reportedly grown increasingly frustrated by the Seahawks' inability to protect him. He's been sacked 394 times in his career, which is the most taken by any quarterback through their first 9 seasons. It's a lot, yes. He was sacked 47 times in 2020. That's the third most in the NFL behind Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson. The Seahawks have only drafted an offensive lineman once in the first round since they've had Russell Wilson. And this is clearly something that they need to work on. So him being wanting to be involved in these kind of decisions is not surprising. If I was getting hit that much and I'm Russell Wilson, I would want to be involved with it as well. Now, I don't like comparing the Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson conversation. And we've talked about it a lot today. Like, you know, is Russell Wilson 100% happy in Seattle? Is there a scenario where he's not with Seattle this year? I don't see that happening, but I don't think the Deshaun Watson Russell Wilson comparison is very straightforward. Like, first of all, Deshaun Watson is in an extremely dysfunctional situation. While he's also getting sacked a lot, correct, it has a lot to do with dysfunction, whereas Russell Wilson feels more like slight mismanagement and kind of taking advantage of Russell Wilson's skills and inability to function without a complete offensive line. Also, the Houston front office came to Deshaun Watson with the option of being involved in these conversations and then did not involve him.
And then didn't do it.
Right. I don't think that Russell Wilson should be kept out of it. But to Eric Mangini's point, it's one thing to be involved in the choosing of your offensive coordinator. It's another thing to be involved in draft and free agency decisions, because it's not as simple as, like, I like this guy, let's sign him.
That's absolutely right. There's a lot more work that goes into the picking of the players than being a part of the interview process. The number Joy said there, 394 times in 9 years?
Yes.
What's 394 divided by 9?
What's 394 divided by 9?
It's 44. It's 43.8 or something. But 44 times a year for his career? I didn't know it was that bad. I knew it was bad this year. I had no...
Well,
394
times
in 9 years is
44
wild. Times
a year. He was sacked 47 times this year, which is the third most in the NFL.
Yeah,
so he's averaging
so every year
the top five of sacks every year.
Yeah, every year. Year after year. It's almost 3 sacks a game for his career. That's wild. I had no idea that was the number. That's Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
There's a number of quarterbacks that could be on the move this offseason. Russell Wilson is one of them. Joy Taylor and I play a quarterback carousel. That's best for last. That's next. Nick, right in for Colin on The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It's Nick right in for Colin on The Herd, and I'm here to tell you Black Rifle Coffee Company is a veteran-owned coffee company serving premium coffee to people who love America. Purchase at www.blackriflecoffee.com/herd and use code HERD at checkout for 20% off your first coffee club order. All right, we call this the best for last. I'm going to be totally honest. I actually think it's the second best thing we're doing today, but second best for last does not sound as good. So we'll call it best for last. Joy Taylor and I are going to play a QB carousel. Joy Taylor, you spin the carousel, put a quarter in the carousel, hop on. I don't know. Go ahead. You take over now, please.
Where will Deshaun Watson end up this offseason?
I hope this, and I think this, and I kind of, as a Chiefs fan, fear this. The 49ers. I think the 49ers with Deshaun would, that's the one team. I know people are like, oh, the Bucs should be the favorites next year. No, the Chiefs are the favorites next year in Vegas and in logic. The Niners with Deshaun, I think, would become the Super Bowl favorites because that defense comes back healthy. Kyle Shanahan offense was made for a quarterback of Deshaun's abilities. And I think Deshaun going from the dysfunction of the Texans to a very well-run organization with San Francisco, I think he would be even more empowered and even better. So I think it's the best fit. I also think if I'm the Niners, right now, Joy, they have the worst quarterback in the division. And that's, even if you think Jimmy Garoppolo's good, I think you think, most people would think, unless you think Stafford stinks, that Jimmy Garoppolo's the worst quarterback in that division. So I think they know they need to make a big time move. So I say the Niners.
Well, if they do that, where will Jimmy Garoppolo end up this offseason?
I mean, I know this is going to sound obvious, but just back in New England? Like, why would he not? Like, it's the same system. They liked him. He didn't play much there, but they had some, you know, very, he played a game and a half there. But he looked good. He knows the system. I guess he always looks good, some would say. And I know what Peter King said, that, you know, that Cam didn't look good this season, but what quarterback could have played well with those weapons? I get that, but Cam's one of my favorite players ever. Cam looked broken. Cam looked like it was painful to throw the football. So unless Cam looks demonstrably different, I think they need to bring in another quarterback. And I don't know, you know, the music's going to end and they're not going to have a chair, but Jimmy Garoppolo could make sense and good fit for them, so I'll say Jimmy.
A guy we talked about a lot today, Russell Wilson, where is he this offseason?
He's got to stay. Listen, what Seattle has right now is, have you, Joy, I'm sure you're very, very online. Have you ever seen the video of the guy who is, I think he's trying to fry some food or something,
yeah,
and it's like a little fire, and like he like drops the thing in, and then it just, the whole kitchen, yeah, exactly, yeah, right. You know the gif I'm talking about. Right now, Seattle is the pot that's boiling a little too high. Now they have the option. You're gonna drop that food in there and light your whole house on fire. That would be trading Russell. Or are you gonna carefully reach over and turn off the burner? And that is, hey Russ, you wanna make our third round pick? Fine, just do it. Don't even tell us, you call it in. Like, what the hell are we talking about here? Like, you what do you want? What do you want us to do? You want us to sign you want us to call Joe Thomas and tell him put on 100 pounds and come play left tackle for us? What do you want? Just keep Russell Wilson happy, you'll be fine. So I say Seattle, Joy.
The Dallas Cowboys, current quarterback, we think, I don't know, based off the social media, who knows, Dak Prescott, where does he end up this offseason?
Why would he go anywhere? Because of this video? He's got to stay in Dallas, right? You tell me, am I missing something here? He has to stay in Dallas. They love him. They're going to pay him a bunch of money.
I love Dak Prescott. I've always been Team Dak, really over Team Wentz, because that was like the comparison forever. Yeah. And I may end up looking right there. I don't know why this deal has never gotten done. I don't know why they wouldn't do this deal before they did the Zeke deal. None of it makes any sense to me. But yes, I think Dak ends up being in Dallas next year, of course. And then they're going to franchise.
And by the way, Joy's going to end up right. I think she already has, on Dak versus Wentz. I somehow found a way to be wrong on that twice, on the different directions. I was Team Dak going into 2017. And Wentz almost won the MVP. And I abandoned Dak entirely and became Team Wentz. And then Wentz immediately became the worst quarterback in the NFL. Maybe the quarterback picking's not my thing. All right, what's the last one?
Finally, Carson Wentz, where does he end up this offseason?
It's got to be Indy. The only time he's been awesome was with Frank Reich. They need a quarterback. They have the offensive line built. He had more different offensive line combinations last year than any quarterback in NFL history. He didn't have great wide receiver weapons in Philly, so it's not like he's going to feel like it's a downgrade in Indy. Jacoby, I don't think they're going to re-sign. Phillip Rivers is done. It just, to me, this is square peg, square hole. Like, it just makes sense. Like, this is, you give up a second-round pick for him? I know you think maybe you'd give up more, but whatever it is, I think this is where he ends up. I think this is where he's always been going to end up once Philly decided to move off of him. Joy, you were spectacular today. Thanks to Peter. Thanks to Mangini. Thanks to Kevin Clark. I'm Nick Wright. This has been The Herd.